I can move around and you can hear me all okay? Good. Well, here I am speaking about Daniel 4, which I called Humbled for or King versus the King. The opening verses of chapter 4 are stunning. In case you didn't notice, they are stunning. The king writes his letter to the whole world. The phrase "to the nations and peoples of every language" should be familiar to you, because we read that last week. When it was, you remember the call, when all the flutes and harps and all the, you were all to bow down, that this was the group. Same people he's talking to. And here it is, same group, but the address is different. Before it was the command to bow down, instead, we're hearing a testimony of the king. Well, I put a little thing up that says there are two objections, because if you ever get to talking about these things to someone else who has a bit of Bible knowledge, you know what the problem's going to be, don't you? Well, you don't believe that, do you? You don't believe that. How could you believe anything like that? First objection on it was its intrinsic improbability. Now, you all know what that means, don't you? Within it, the statement itself is improbable, because what king is going to write and tell people how dumb he's been? Not going to do it. It just doesn't happen when you're in power. Look at Donald Trump. You don't do it, do you? It's all going fine. I was only joking before when I said that dumb thing. Then the second objection, there's little to no record of it. Well, the first one, it negates the power of conversion, doesn't it? Someone who's truly converted will want to tell. We hear that, don't we? Testimonies of people who tell you the story of themselves. This is what the king has done. That should come up on there, Ken. Thank you. And the next one is little to no record. They tell us what we already know. That's not a strong objection in my book, because we know that the Assyrian and Chaldean edicts have, there's very little left of them, but there, and that comes up to the next evidence, and it comes from two people, from Berosus and from Abidenus. I think that's how you say it. But the first, Berosus, he was a priest in the temple, priest of very highly educated. And he traveled to Greece, where his productions, his writings and things, were so famous that he actually acquired great fame in himself there. And his student, that was Abidenus, he was a pupil. Berosus wrote three books on it. We've only got fragments in Josephus and a few others, Eusebius. But in amongst it, Abidenus wrote a record as well, which is almost what we've part of the king today. He just uses a slightly different setting on it, slightly different application, but not significant enough. So there is actual historical record, just not a lot of it. That's the thing. So the objections, you're always going to hear them. But I don't think that they hold the weight. One of the other objections is that there's nothing written in Hebrew histories, that is, Kings and Chronicles and so forth, about it. And that's true as well. But they did have Daniel's writing. And Daniel got put into a different genre of writing. The rest of the chapter talks about the dream, which I've put on the heading there. Just to remind you where I'm stepping through the dream. This is all about Nebuchadnezzar's conversion and how it came about. Once again, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. In contrast to this time, he does have his advisors. Remember before they wouldn't, he said, no, you tell me the dream and the interpretation. This time he told the advisors, but they still couldn't interpret it. So he called Daniel, and yes, he got his interpretation. And what does the interpretation do for us? Well, God's purpose tells us that God's purpose in, make sure I've not missed a page somewhere. I have. Here we are. Sorry. Tells Daniel the dream. So the, sorry, go back to the dream. I've got all my numbers all mixed up here. Should throw them away, shouldn't I? The king tells Daniel the dream. The tree's to be cut down to a stump. So I'm actually cutting this short. If I went through it all, we'd be standing here still tonight at 5 o'clock and we could join the next service. But you don't want to do that, do you? No. No, we don't want to do that. So here it is. The tree cut down to a stump, bound in irons and bronze. Now, some of the commentators in that see it as a statement to say the kingdom will be affirmed. That would be a sort of visual representation, wouldn't it? I don't think that's correct altogether, because the next little verse 16 starts to pick up the fact that it personifies this whole vision, and it sounds more like the way they restrained maniacs in the day. You know, people who had manic episodes and things, and they would become dangerous to themselves. So self-restraint, they put them in manacles and things. And that's what it sounds like to me in there. Verse 17, the king's told by the holy messengers that the purpose of the dream was so that people would know that Judah's God is the Most High, the true God, in control of the kingdoms of the world. So the tree says he's in power, but Nebuchadnezzar was in power, but God has chopped down the tree, and here we have this picture of him being humbled. And so this one, that he will be turned right down, really humbles him. And we've got the gentle messenger in it. Daniel, how would you be talking to the king? I don't know. I've never had to talk to a king myself. I was at the airport dropping some friends off, and as I drove back, and I got a message from God. Do you ever get a message from God? I just had this sense that deep inside I knew I had to buy a book for someone, and I knew what the book was, and so I thought, oh, well, I'm near Kurong, I can go past there. So I got the book, and I thought, I know who this is for. I know why God's prompting me. It was just reminding me to get this book. And I had a friend I thought would benefit from it. But as I drove down to pick up the freeway again, just this whole image of needing to take it to the Archbishop came to mind. So I thought, okay, Lord, what do I do about this? And I just had a word for God, so I wrote that word down, for the Archbishop. I wrote it down, rung up and said, look, when could I come and visit, see you? I got an appointment time and popped in to see him, and I said to him, this is where I sort of connect with here, because I thought, do I get my license revoked or what from this? And I said, Archbishop, I don't know what you're like in getting a word, but I have a word for you, and I've written it down, and I believe God wanted me to give you this book. I said, I can tell you about the book and why I think it's like, but maybe you just need to read it yourself. And amazingly, the Archbishop received it. That was Roger, when Roger Herford, he received it. He said, oh, okay, and opened it up and read it. And guess what happened? No, he didn't take my license off me. I'm still here. He actually said, this was meant for me this morning. Now, that's what happens when you're faithful. The gentle messenger has a lot of power. When a gentle messenger isn't listened to, you know what happens next, don't you? The tough messenger comes. That's how they ended up in exile. So the gentle messenger, he delivers the message to the king. He's really terrified by this, and he says to the king, oh, that this was not about you. It should be for your enemies, not for you. And the king said, don't be frightened, just tell me. So he goes ahead, and because he's not actually acknowledging God. And how many messages has he had now? This is dream two, isn't it? But he also saw the guys in the fire. They're like amazing. What do you need to wake you up? What would it take? And so here he is, in amongst all of this. 12 months later, he's totally ignored. Who does that remind you of? Just about everybody does that. He just ignored on looking out, and he says, what is it? Just looking to see if I put the words there. I haven't. So basically, he's standing out and he's saying, look at my wonderful empire. Look at it all. It's magnificent. And just as he speaks that I have done, and just as he speaks the words, what happens? The messenger spoke to him and said, it's going to be fulfilled. And sure enough, the whole dream is fulfilled. Not this magnificent. And the consequences. The nation that ruled the world reduced, and there's a stage to that reduction. The message was seven times, and some have put 7 years. I'm not sure, because seven was the perfect number, and so it might have been just the right time, for the right time, the time that it took for him to wake up to himself. For some of us, it could be 70 years. Yes? No? Some of us are a bit slow on the uptake when it comes to things, but so you have, in the dream, Nebuchadnezzar was like the tree that gave sanctuary to the birds. Now what's happening? The image that's coming out, his hair's growing out like long feathers, his fingernails are like claws. There's a kind of reversal there, isn't it? I don't think we're meant to miss that reversal, where he now is like a bird, and whose empire is he nesting in? He's living in God's creation. It's not his. For whatever that seven times is, it's him. Finally, the king wakes up to himself. And he submits to God as the true king. It's a shadow of that all made to make, isn't it? Aren't we all called in some way to acknowledge the Lord and his greatness? as the God, so his sanity is restored. And now his kingdom's restored as well. The last chapter, or he just says it out clearly, those who walk in pride, he's able to humble. Taught the same thing, didn't he? God can humble. So what are the lessons for learners? If we're to learn something today, what lesson should we take? Well, first of all, I've said some people need to hear the gospel message a number of times before it gets to them. Yeah? Many, it seems, need to lose something before they find focus. Nebuchadnezzar was disturbed by dreams, gripped by rage, lost his sanity. Don't wait until you're driven to despair. I think about people, you know, those, what are they called, promotional speakers and people like that. So many times they've had some tragedy in their life that's pulled them up. And I think, please, Lord, I don't want a tragedy before I wake up. Wake me up, please, without the tragedy. If you're a committed believer in the Lord Jesus, then recognize this. You may be called to deliver the gospel to another and find even the thought of it can be terrifying. Me? Take a message to somebody? It can be like that. Like in Daniel 19. Yet consider whom you serve, the source or the receiver. You know, so many times I hear people say things like, I don't want to upset my friendship. I've got such a good friendship. It'll be spoiled if I talk about God. How good's the friendship? We don't want to be slapping people in the face with things, but we want to be able to be ourselves, don't we? To be who we are. And I can tell you, I have got friends and family that are unbelievers or need to believe, I think is where I'd put them more clearly. But every time we go out for a meal, you know what they wait for? They know I'm going to say grace. And they wait. Now, I think there's something about acknowledgement in there. And so we should not be afraid. Daniel really cared about Nebuchadnezzar, so the message was delivered sensitively, compassionately, and accurately. And we need to be prepared to do the same. Did that sound like an end? Because I just discovered I'd shuffled the pages. One of the things I try to encourage you in looking at Daniel is to learn the lessons through the journey. And, you know, a lot of the lessons we get in life are hard won, are they not? And we each have our own story. I try to get those. I remember the first time that I really come to know that Jesus cared about me, and when the pastor there said, you've got a good testimony. You need to be able to share it. So he got a group of us, and every time we'd meet, and he'd say, okay, let's practice it and tell us. So after church, we'd sit and talk with him. And then he'd say, it's too long. Cut it down. Get it down into a nice short statement. And that's what I've done over the time, try to keep it short. One friend of mine uses a little matchbox and three or four things in it, and that's his whole testimony. He just opens a matchbox and he takes one thing out at a time, 4 points. So think about how you would, if God gives you the opportunity to share the gospel with someone, something that might be absolutely life-changing, take them from world sanity to God's sanity. You could do it. Think about it, and may God bless you.